Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 49, featuring Tim Hansen. Tim Hansen is a pretty interesting person. I met him over at Bad Robot a while back, and we were helping him out on a project. He has a really interesting background. He started off doing a bunch of stuff on the web, and he has done a lot of other things as well. He worked as an editor over at Google and is now sort of heavily involved in visual effects. He also has an interesting perspective about education, about certain things where education had failed him. And you'll, if you go back to the episode with Alex Alvarez, you'll sort of have a perspective of why all these things are happening. It's pretty interesting. But I really enjoyed our talk with him. He's also has a website called MaxDepth, which you should check out. That website, he's been selling some tutorials on there, which are pretty in-depth and pretty useful if people want to get into them. And if you're listening to this podcast, you can get a discount on it. Just enter Garage25 and you'll get a discount. So again, it's MaxDepth and the discount is Garage25. Just a reminder, I want you to make sure that you guys are following us on social. So if you're on Twitter, we have a website there or a Twitter there, which is CG underscore labs or at CG underscore labs. You can also follow the Chaos Group Twitter, which is at Chaos Group. And we're also on Facebook. So just look up Chaos Group on Facebook and LinkedIn or anywhere else you want to be on social. So we are there. Make sure you like us and give us ratings on iTunes. If you're listening to this on iTunes, make sure you let us know if you like it. Don't be shy to leave comments either on iTunes or on the website itself. So labs.chaosgroup.com, and you can leave us comments on these episodes. Love to hear your feedback. If you have any ideas of other people you'd like to have on, let us know and we'll be able to get those people on as well. I've actually been able to get a couple of requests in. So anyway, all right, guys, thanks a lot.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
I'm gonna say the first time you and I have actually like hung out together was at JJ's, right?
Yeah, at Bad Robot.
Bad Robot, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I have a little bit of history with Bad Robot, and I'm going to put this out there. The first job I got in visual effects was at Digital Domain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the guy who hired me is an ex-architect and helped design Bad Robot.
Oh, the building that they're in over at the typewriter?
Yeah. Which is pretty awesome, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a beautiful place.
Yeah. So, and that building is just kind of like you go in there, it's a candy land of funness, right?
Yeah, you walk into basically the little toy shop there, and then there's the little wax maker for the little robot guy.
Okay, so for those who are, you know, want to know, like, let's just say, you walk up to the building and there's a button. What does the button say?
As the
front entrance.
Jeez, it's been.
Are you ready or something?
Yeah, like? Yeah. It's been a year since I was over there, but yeah. It's are you ready? I think.
Yeah, it's one of those. And it's a callback to Lost or something like that, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, and it's like nondescript. It has like a little blue dot, kind of just staring at you, like you don't know what it is.
Yeah, and you walk in there, it's like. It's a nerd candy land.
Yeah, no, it was definitely the kind of place you didn't mind spending long hours at.
No, right. So when I was there, I was helping you guys. You were working on some big project, and doing some stuff. And it was like, oh yeah, hang out. You can have lunch, etc. And it's it's the typical Hollywood lunch, like completely catered. Everything's wonderful. And you had this every day, right?
Yeah, no, Chef Mike was great.
Yeah, Chef Mike. So imagine working in a place where you have a chef every day that made
you know, lunch for you. And I was saying right then at that point, you guys were nervous, like, oh, JJ's back. He was shooting Star Wars, et cetera, what's going on? And I was like, well, I spotted JJ and who else was there? Someone else was there. And I was like, well, I saw someone, this other person and JJ and the risotto. And I said, the last thing was the best thing on the menu. Yeah. And I texted this to my wife and she said, you want to say that you saw JJ Abrams and the risotto was better than JJ Abrams? I said, yes, actually the risotto was better than JJ Abrams because he was really cool, but that risotto was that good.
Yeah, know? Yeah, yeah. No, it was not a bad thing to have a chef for lunch every day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it was an interesting time to be there too because they were just starting their visual effects department. So, in a way, it was like, you know, the farm, I would have liked a render farm more than a chef, but, right. You know, it's not anything to shake a stick at.
Well, okay, well, let's put that out there. I mean, a render farm is more important than a chef, right?
Yeah, especially if, you know, you're trying to do visual effects.
Okay. So, what would have made, if, as an example, mm-hmm. you were able to render on the cloud instead of a render farm, would that have been better?
Well, it's actually interesting that you asked that because we actually tried for a while to
at Bad Robot.
Yeah, yeah. That's why we didn't get a farm straight out of the gate. Was I guess maybe just put a little bit of context to it is when they brought me in was at a time when they were just sort of trying out for the first time, really doing things in house. Like they had done, you know, shots and some compositing and things like that here and there. But because, you know, JJ didn't want to be in London and all these places more than he had to be, he lives in LA, his family's in LA, like he's a really awesome, like family guy. His wife is amazing, philanthropist, just wonderful lady. Mm-hmm. And he wants to be around them. So why am I sending all these shots out when I could do this here? Like they have, you know, they edit the stuff there. They have a screening room, theater. Like, well, why don't I do this? So we were trying to do that for the first time there. And so they wanted to try everything. So rather than initially investing in, you know, a huge render farm, they're like, well, let's try the Atomic Fiction and Google Cloud and things like that. And at that time, it wasn't as far along as it is now. And we really actually had a hard time getting things back because the Houdini build that was on Google's cloud didn't match the build that we were running. And so we would send files and cross our fingers and hope when we came back on Monday that they would be, you know, rendered and ready to go.
Right.
And they just, for our case study, they did not work.
Right.
at that time. So. Well,
this brings up a huge issue because I think you're right. I mean, like obviously Atomic Fission has been just pounding the pavement on this. Right.
Yeah.
And, figuring out a way that cloud rendering is going to work is going to involve I need my version up there or whatever it is. Yeah. Like these are important questions to answer. And for those people that are making major decisions, they're dealing with probably a specific build of what's going on.
Yeah.
And yeah. And that's actually kind of an important question. I was like, yeah. How are you gonna make that work? You
know? Yeah, it definitely bit us in those initial tests because we were running betas of V-Ray 3 at the time, and so for when we first were hooking up with them, they were all still on 2.4, mm-hmm. and so for what we were trying to render, which was like 4K stereo full CG stuff.
And by then, the 3.0 builds were way better at that.
Yeah. Oh, man. Like, with the amount of time that we had, even with some of the initial just growing pains of working on an early beta, mm-hmm. It's still, there was literally no way we could have done it on 2.4. And just right. The beta that we had of 3, like, easily was like 2-3 times faster on the same you know, scene with nothing different happening. So
yeah, just little update and launch. Right?
Yeah, yeah. So it was really important. Like I pushed really hard and fought to stay on the beta because I'm like, yes, you know, at that time there were a couple of little things that were hanging us up, but that was actually kind of what grew the great respect that I have like for you and for Vlado is we were really out there on a couple of things and, you know, if you guys hadn't come in, you know, we plied you with free lunch and things like that. And
sure.
Vlado sat next to me with his little laptop and just banged away and was like, oh yes, I changed this last week for this studio. Yeah, I see.
I want to just put this in perspective for people. Like literally Vlado was sitting next to you on his laptop at Bat Robot recoding and like building new code that was going on the fly.
It was amazing. And so literally we found the one line of code that was hanging us up. It was just something was happening. I think it was the file would write out, it would write the file, but the write out would get stuck at 100% for like, you know, 10, 15 minutes or something like that. And then it would finally, you know, finish. And it was a really simple thing. Once he found it, he was like, oh, and then he rewrote it, gave us another build. And then our renders were just like burning off the farm.
Yeah,
like,
because they weren't hung up for 15 minutes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So things like that were happening. So there were all these growing pains at the time is, you know, we're on an early beta and rolling a project out on a beta ever is always an adventure.
Yeah.
We're trying out these, you know, cloud rendering services and, you know, they're on 2.4. Now we have a new build and then we have to wait for them to install that new build on all their machines and then mirror that image and then get it out on. And so it just logistically, it was a difficult thing that nobody was really telling us at the time that these things would be considerations that we would have to think about. That, you know, our EP was told like, oh yeah, you just spool it up, you get 10,000 machines and then your frames are done, you know. And
yeah.
And then, you know, we'd come back on Monday and it's like, okay, nothing.
Yeah, but you had to send 10,000 frames of crap.
Exactly. And then we just paid, you know, for 10,000 frames of crap. So it was an experience. Like
things are changing though. I think what's important that everyone realizes is like, these are trying times.
Yeah, it's already so much better.
Yeah. Right. So I'm going to give you I don't know if I've actually said this on the podcast, but I'm gonna put it out there for those who haven't listened to this, or maybe those who have. It doesn't matter. When I went to Method, and they hired me, and they basically said, we want to do V-Ray for Maya, and we want to do it on Linux. And at that time, V-Ray for Maya was on beta for like a year or two. No one ever used it. It was never used. Mm-hmm. And basically they hired me at this place. Like, we love what is coming out of V-Ray. We know there's a beta for V-Ray for Maya and we want to use it on Linux and go for it. That was my objective as a new hire. So I talked to Vlado and I said, Vlado, why has no one ever used V-Ray in Maya? And he goes, I put it out there 2 years ago, no one giving me any feedback. Right? Mm. And that's the problem. Right?
Yeah.
You have to have feedback.
Yeah.
If you don't have feedback, your beta is useless. Right?
Yeah, no, definitely. It, on the flip side of that, I actually probably think Vlado would see emails from me and be like, oh, great, here we go again.
No, but he's appreciative of it. Okay, I'll tell you this, and I'll go back to this because, you know, I was like, all right, I am about to torture test your V-Ray for Maya, and I want to find a way to make this worthwhile. And, you know, Vlado's like, all right, fine. And he actually, like, you know, Vlado and I have known each other for years. We're, you know, very personal friends. And before I was actually working for Chaos Group, and so he actually put me on the bug list and is like, all right, go in here, enter everything that you see that's wrong. Mm-hmm. And there were so many problems. Mm-hmm. Because no one actually
had done it. Yeah.
And there were random problems. So the first week, and I'm not kidding you, I entered 100 bugs. 100 bugs. Including bugs like, and every frame that ends with a number 9 didn't render. I mean, I don't know why that happened, but when someone was like, oh, crap, you know, like,
yeah.
And the next week, by the way, after I entered 100 bugs, 95 were solved.
Yeah.
Because no one tested it.
Yeah.
It was like that simple.
Yeah.
No, like, the thing is, just because there's a bug doesn't mean it's not simple to solve. Report it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that people don't realize when they're on betas. You've got to report these problems.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not just, oh, I get something earlier. It's you have a responsibility
you
to
have a
improve.
Responsibility,
the,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because that the putting you on a beta means you are responsible for making this product better. Actually, the benefit to you is that if you would like it to work the way you want it to work, that's an advantage,
yeah,
right?
No, definitely.
So there's a quid pro quo, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And I mean, not to retread on it, but I don't want to bury the lead here too, but let's talk about Vlado.
Like, yeah.
How awesome is that guy? Like, I mean, come on. He's like, you know, young, buff, like a genius dude. Like, yeah. that guy's got the world by the balls, man.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Yeah, and he's not shy.
He's a really nice guy.
I'll tell you what's funny is when you look at him, he's very shy.
Yeah.
But on the online personality of Vlado is not shy.
Yeah.
I have been unbelievably impressed by Vlado for years, and I've known him since 2002. But he is not afraid to just take it on, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, I every now and then I'll laugh because I'll do some Google search on, you know, we come up on some strange oddity for a shot we're working on, and then I'll go and I'll see some post in like a CG Society website of, oh, I had this problem, and then boom, there's Vlado.
Right.
He's like, oh, well, you do this and you do this, or I'll have that in the next build. And it's like, he's just the ground that dude covers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I've seen it on the online level where, like, oh, Vlado just like intervenes here, intervenes there, intervenes there. But I remember there was a very weird, very strange bug that was happening at Digital Domain. I think it was on Tron. But Vlado happened to be in town, and it was like, all right, we can't reproduce this in any other way except for extremely complex scenes, which means it's hard to give that to you, right?
Right, right.
As opposed to like, let me make you a simple scene that reproduces a problem. Those are great. Everyone loves those because like you can actually just type them out and tell them people how to do things.
It's the complexity where you really find some of those funky little things.
Right. And I forgot what it was specifically, but it was something that involves subdivision services, very complex scenes, and black artifacts that would just randomly appear. Hmm. Like these little weird little black circles on things. And Vlado said, I've seen those things from other people, but no one can give me a scene that would make that happen because they're too complex, or they're production scenes or whatever it is. And back at DD for some reason. He was in LA for something, and we sat him down at our office, and it's like, here's the scene, check it out. And he sat there, and he was there for about 3-4 hours, and he just hammered away on it. But I remember him solving the problem,
and he's like
it's a little epiphany.
Yeah.
And he's in a full hardcore production environment where there's like artists going over the place, you know, like they're drinking shots, like whatever crap's going on in a VFX industry. And he's just plugging away, like hardcore coding. He's like, he got it. And I could just see this epiphany of joy in his face. Like, got it. And that's, I think, what he lives for.
Yeah. You know?
Like he lives for that, like, I got it. And it was solved. Like, it was literally a solved problem. I was like, I'll get that built for you tomorrow. Done.
Yep.
Yeah. So he's a good guy, you know. So it's kind of cool to be around that because, you know, I think there's a little bit of a, you know, the irony is now that Viewer is actually a big product.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always considered like a little bit of a, you know, a gung show, like, hey, we're here, we're under the radar, et cetera. But now suddenly V-Ray is like the big product.
Yeah, no, it's everywhere. I mean, even the V-Ray and Nuke.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, at this point, it's like, where isn't V-Ray is really the question.
Yeah, and in products that you probably don't even know or initially, like VFX is actually one of our smaller industries.
At this point.
Yeah, yeah, because like ArcViz is a bigger industry for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, V-Ray for Rhino doesn't necessarily mean that much to you, but it's actually a big product. V-Ray for SketchUp is actually bigger than most of our products.
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, we're looking at a bunch of other things. Like we've shown teasers of V-Ray for in Revit, which you probably don't even know what that is.
Well, it's a architectural, or like, isn't it for manufacturing?
No, Revit is architectural design, product, or architecture BIM design, which is basically like project management design. Mm-hmm. So we'd like, if you're going to design a building and make it work, et cetera, we have V-Ray built in. We have V-Ray in more products. But I mean really in, as opposed to export and then render. It's in the product, right? So that's a difference that I think that's important about it. But I don't want to talk too much about it. But let's talk about your past. Where did you come from?
Well, actually, it's funny that you were saying V-Ray and SketchUp, because actually one of my first jobs was for Google.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I lived up in San Francisco for like 10 years. And before I got into visual effects, I was actually an editor. And so I was an in-house editor for Google during the salad days. Like I was there for the Gmail launch and YouTube and Google Maps. Like I used to cut all those commercials and like training material and all that stuff. Yeah, it was really cool. It was a great place to be for, like, I think it was there like three and a half years. But it definitely was not something for me that I could have done long term, because the best way I can put it is, if you're a coder, and like if you're a Vlado,
right,
it's the best place in the world. They put it together where literally you never want to leave campus. Like you've got laundry, childcare, free breakfast, lunch, dinner. I had a pool table outside my office. Like it was the typical, stereotypical, you know, Google experience.
Silicon Valley experience, right.
And also I love Silicon Valley.
Sure.
For that, because it's so an inside joke, almost everything. When I saw that show for the first time, I watched it on accident. It was after Game of Thrones and just happened to be on. We were still talking about the show. And I, when it was over, I still have the Facebook post where I was laughing about it, but like I stood up and did a slow clap because I was like, this show is literally what my life was for three years. So it was great, but it was also for the creative side, not the best. Like if I had to do one more talking head on a white background with Trade Gothic Bold number 2, and I still remember to the font how many videos I had to do that was like that. Like I just couldn't take it anymore. And so at that point, I actually got into visual effects.
You know, by the way, the whole Google video standard is why I decided I need to do a banjo for the intro to this podcast.
Oh, really?
Well, it almost as a joke, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I need a banjo here. And so I knew the only guy who could like really do a great like banjo player. Like we need something like very lighthearted because that's the Silicon Valley mentality, right?
Yeah. It's going to change the world.
Yeah. Well, white background.
Yeah. White background. Trade Gothic Bowl number 2. Yeah. But yeah, so I was doing that. I was an editor, and then organically it kind of changed because I got tired of waiting for art departments to get me my graphics to cut in. And I was like, well, how hard can this be? So I bought a copy of After Effects, and then I am, oddly enough, for as an interesting path as I had through school, I love learning. Because I never finished school. I went to Academy of Art And I had a great guidance counselor that told me basically, go get a job. Don't accrue this debt. Just go work. You know enough to be able to go get a job cutting.
Made you graduate without, or not graduate.
Yeah. Yeah. So I left, but luckily I would have accrued like another $60,000 of debt had I stayed, and I still would have gotten the same job afterwards. So it's an interesting thing. Like I sometimes have trouble.
all right. I want to go back to that. Yeah, hold on just a second. Cause I, just a side note.
Yeah.
So your guidance counselor at Academy Art.
Yeah.
This is a for-profit company.
Yes.
Told you to quit and not give any more money to the school that you were giving to,
yeah,
to get a job.
Because
I want to know this a little bit more.
So I've got two really amazing university stories.
Okay.
And this is the first one. So before I went there, I was in web design back in the first .com kind of thing. My
sure.
mom ran the computer network for the state of Tennessee, so there was just always software and computers around me my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So I got into one summer, she had early versions of like Flash and Photoshop and Dreamweaver. And she's like, I don't know what this is, figure it out. And so I
Great.
Just figured it out. And
so
then,
you're like the kid who was like figuring shit out.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And so then I started doing the web page for the school that I went to. And then I just kind of got into it like that. So fast forward in the early 2000s, I was the webmaster for Gibson Guitars in
Nice.
Nashville. So I was doing that, and I found when I went to film school that Final Cut and Avid and things like that were very similar to the way that a Flash would work. It was a layer stack.
Okay.
So I gravitated instantly towards nonlinear editing because it was basically things that I had already seen and done. So,
right.
So I found myself in an Edit 1 class. And, I was doing things beyond what we were doing just because, not because I was any better than anybody else, but just because I was more familiar with the structure of the software. I could understand it just by looking at it. So I went to the teacher one day after class and I was like, well, we're doing XYZ, but, I want to do this. I'm like, can you show me how would I accomplish this? I don't remember what the specific thing was, but they were like, oh, no, I can't answer that. And I was like, oh, well, can you point me to the professor that does know that? And he's like, oh, no, I know what you're talking about. I just can't answer that. And I'm like, oh, you mean because it's covered in Edit 2? And he's like, yes.
And because I haven't figured it out yet.
Oh, no, no, because I hadn't paid the extra money for the Edit 2 class. I was in Edit 1. And so I was like, at that moment, I was like, I don't know that ethically I can be behind this. Like,
asking for more money.
Yeah, I'm paying.
I can answer your question if you pay me more money.
Exactly. And that was how it was. And I mean, my intro to computer graphics class, the first assignment was burn a CD. And I'm like, why the heck am I paying all this money for people that won't tell me what I want to know, and they're having me burn
up.
CDs.
I'm sorry, but like that's fucked up.
Yeah, so it was crazy. So I went to my guidance counselor, and he's like, basically, stick it out for the rest of the second semester that I was there, like do a full year basically. But he's like, judging by the work that you're showing me, like the things like, everybody's friend was in a band, so you make music videos or you do, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So we would go shoot these things and cut them together. And he's like, looking at what you're showing me, there's no reason you couldn't just go get a job.
Right.
And it's like, and I can't tell you that these things won't continue to happen in terms of, I have this question, I can answer that for you because you haven't paid for the next class yet.
Right.
And I couldn't be a part of it.
No, so. I agree. And I think it's important for people to realize, and this is interesting because the podcast that when I don't know when this spot is going to come out, it's probably going to come out in, several weeks, but the podcast for those who have been following it, the one that came out this week was with Alex Alvarez and was about art education and about all those things. And,
yep.
And you listened to that one, right?
Yeah, yeah. And actually, I'm a huge admirer of Alex and what he's done and what he's accomplished. And
right.
Given the choice between the two, I mean, I know that Noman's a little bit more expensive now than it used to be, but I
sure.
would still send somebody to Noman over really anywhere else that I can think of that wants to do
Sure.
You want to be a Houdini artist? Do you want to be a texture artist? You want to be a lighting artist? Like, you could be hard pressed to find something better than
that attitude of pay to play for education is kind of bullshit. Right?
Yeah, and it's a huge problem just in the States, I think, in general. I mean, I went first to the University of Tennessee just for undergrad, and then kind of the same thing happened there. This is my second, you know, school story.
Right.
So we already talked that I got into web design and things like that. And so this is in the year, it was 1999. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was getting big into all that stuff. And so the school didn't have a major for it yet.
Right.
And they had as many schools do, they have a thing where you can petition to create a major if you can show a curriculum from another university or whatever and show that, you know, it's a viable thing. You could petition to create your own major. So I went to the university in 1999 and said I'd like to make a graphic design, web design curriculum. And then they denied me and said that the internet was a fad and they're not going to base a curriculum around something that's going to be gone in 5 years. Think about that for a minute.
1999, University of Tennessee.
Yeah.
Internet is a fad.
Internet is a fad. We'll be gone. We're not going to create a curriculum around that. Then fast forward 5 years from then, and they had a program. So
sure,
it didn't help me.
I think Prince said that once, and he's like eating his words right now.
Yeah. It was amazing. So when that happened, it was interesting how these things. It seems to be cyclical, but like. That happened, and roughly a semester later, I dropped out and got the job at Gibson doing their webpage because it's like.
So you have been involved in giving people instructions on the internet for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but for the Max Steps website for the last 2 years, 2-3 years.
Right, and we'll get to that at some point because I want to sort of arrive at why you did that, but. I remember specifically like when I was doing stuff and I was like looking at things and this is around 1995 or so. And that was when HTML kind of just appeared, right?
Yeah.
It was like the Mozilla years and stuff like that. And so I was like, oh, you can make your own home page. It was like a weird concept.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So I made my own home page. And they kept that at Rice University for like 10 years. It's like, this is one of the first home pages that ever existed.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, like, and it was embarrassing because like, it was just me in it. It's like, it might as well have been Borat that made the homepage, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
But like, it's what I had, you know?
Yeah, at the time it was, you know, you grabbed every piece of clip art you could find.
Whatever, you know, I figured it out. Like HTML, by the way, was hand coded in Notepad. Like that's what it was, you know, and as you know. So so that was interesting to do that. So, okay, so you were at Google, you're making videos for Google. And so what happened after that? How did you get into the CG world?
So, yeah, so just like I was saying, I was like waiting for graphics and things and I was, you know, figured out how hard could it be. I love learning new things anyway. So I got After Effects.
Right.
And then from After Effects, you know, it was at a point where, you know, you were doing all these 2.5D tricks to fake 3D. And I was like, well, why don't I just learn 3D? So then I bought Maya, and then that was when things really sort of, you know, stuck for me is I spent probably the next 8 months. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch TV at all. I read every manual I could find. I bought every Gnomon tutorial DVD that I could find. Nice. I watched digital tutors. Like I did the whole thing. I basically spent 8 months.
What year was this?
This was 2007, 2008, like transitioning 2007, 2008. And so I just basically made the decision I'm going to get into visual effects. Wow. And then after 8 months of hardcore just immersion in everything, and it was the thing that I really
that's actually pretty late because considering where you are now, like you really must have just like hardcore just
it was
your
zero.
Brain was like a funnel, right?
Yeah, it was zero to hero in like less than a year,
right?
And then it was actually funny too. I had never touched any 3D before 2007, 2008, and then in 2009, I won an Emmy for Best Visual Effects in, in broadcast when I was working at NBC Comcast in San Francisco. So it was just my, for whatever reason, my brain just really took to it.
Right.
And so everything that I could find, I would get into. So it was first, it was After Effects, and then it was Maya. Then I got into ZBrush, and then I got into RealFlow, and then I got into Mari, and then I learned Nuke. And it was just basically every 8 to 9 months, I would learn a new software package.
Yep.
And then after that, it was, okay, now I know all these things. How can I refine it and get to the nitty-gritty? How can I get to the point where it's not just me regurgitating a tutorial? I actually know the ins and outs. This situation arises that isn't in any tutorial. What do you do? How do you get around it? How do you make yourself production viable?
Right.
And then the way that I did it was just to sit there and just bang my head against it and, you know, mess with sliders.
Yeah.
You know, like take it to 11. What does this do?
and you're not shy, as you, as we've talked about in the beginning of the podcast, you're not shy to just like, hey, there's a problem.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah.
And you've done that with me. You've done it with me several times. Like, hey, there's a problem. Like, well, let's figure this out. And, and then we've solved it. And it's like either there's a solution or there's a bug.
You know,
something is happening that I don't know. And I think that's a lot of – that's a problem that a lot of, I have. So there's several things. Let's talk about this specifically because I want to make sure we figure out the error reporting rate, right? So there's a problem where like – I don't know what's going on, and therefore I need more education.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And there's a big field for people that can be helped on that, including yourself, right? And then there's the something's broken.
Right.
And therefore I need to report it somehow. And that's an important part because if your product's going to get any better, you need to report it. And then there's the, I come from a large company and I don't want to report any problems because I'm going to solve it myself. And that is a huge problem.
Yeah.
Those people need to say, hey, I have a partner that it's delivering me my product, they need to know about this problem and then move forward. And on our side, that has gotten, in the last 5-6 years, has gotten so much better that is the reason why V-Ray is as good as it is.
Yeah.
Because those big companies that are reporting major bugs are actually reporting them.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing that I've found that... You know, I feel like it's gotten a little bit better too, but especially maybe, you know, over the last decade, people have just been really afraid to admit that they don't know something.
Yeah.
Or that, you
there's
know,
too much to know. Why are you like, oh, I don't know the answer to this.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's like, you know, it, just because, or it's also interesting too, because I'm sure that you guys get a lot of this as well, but it's an interesting side thing that's come up from, you know, the tutorial things that I do is there's 5 to 10,000 different ways to arrive at the same place. And if somebody's like, you know, oh, well, you only used 2 minimum samples instead of 4, clearly you're an idiot and you don't know what you're talking about. And it's like, no, there are many ways to arrive there. And maybe I used a higher sample rate here because I didn't want to increase the samples on the lights or whatever. Like, it's this weird thing where people are like half terrified to admit that they're not 100% right every time with everything that they do. And then you've got these other group of people that are totally feeding that fear because they're like, if you make one wrong move, I'm going to let everyone know that you suck.
Well, it's also the fact that people want to prey on the fact that what you did was wrong, right?
Yeah.
It's the thing where what you did is wrong and therefore I'm going to hound you on it as opposed to, hey, I learned something from this.
Right.
And that's wrong, you know?
Yeah, like, it doesn't make any sense to me. And that was something that I've never been afraid to do. And it's made things difficult for me at times at different places along the way that I've stopped. Sure. Because it's like, if something's not working, I'm not afraid to say, you know, hey, this render took an hour. I don't know why. I'm going to have to figure it out. I don't immediately know.
Trust me.
But I will debug and right. I will dig down and I'll find what the problem is. But I'm sorry, every render does not come out beautiful and perfect on the first try.
Absolutely. And you know, like I've done a lot of V-Ray renders. People trust me to do like great V-Ray renders, etc. Yeah. I have done renders that have lasted for freaking ever and I just gave up.
Yeah.
I just said, I don't know what to do. Just put it on the farm. It's going to take 35 hours a frame. I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
I just don't care anymore.
Yeah. It'll get there.
Right. And I'm going to give you, if anyone is out there who's listening, I'm going to give you a very specific example. And Bill Spradling, if you're listening, he's one of the best lighters I work with. He's an awesome guy. Do you know Bill?
Yeah, yeah. We worked together at Zoic. He's a great guy. Soup there, yeah.
And so I love Bill. And I was working on Oblivion with him, mm-hmm. and he was doing a lot of the uber close-ups of the drones on Oblivion, right?
Yeah.
So there's actually a very simple solution for this now in V-Ray, which I wish I had back when we were doing. But the way that the eye worked on the drone, it was like one little red eye, mm-hmm. and it had this little zoom effect. Mm-hmm. And we actually modeled the lenses 100% accurate, right? So that the way that eye refraction work and the little red of it happened, we actually ray traced that 100% accurately. Mm-hmm. But in order for that to work correctly, you have to actually ray trace like, you know, 200 rays like to make it work right and give you a noise-free render. And those ended up being, if you're going to do it right in V-Ray, back then, mm-hmm. It's going to take 36 hours a frame to render.
Yeah.
It's kind of bullshit.
And potentially you'd have the little fireflies, but now you have...
No.
Clamp max we had
fireflies unless you do 36 hours a frame.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
So like, and I'm dealing with Eric Barba and Joe Kaczynski, mm-hmm. who are like, noise-free, please.
Yes.
I would like that noise-free. And I know exactly what you're doing because they all know exactly what's going on. It's like, oh, I can't do this. And I'm like, yeah, we're going to, you know, noise reduct. No noise reduction, nothing. Like they know when you mess with the ray tracing. They want a clean render from the start. Now, V-Ray now has solutions to make that happen. Like basically I could have done that in an hour frame now.
Right, right.
But back then I couldn't do it. And Bill was struggling. I was like, you know what? Screw it. Bill, you got all those close-ups of the drone. They're all going to take 36 hours a frame. I'm sorry to do this to you. And he's like, that's fine. I can just sit here and wait for those renders to happen. It's like,
yeah,
but yeah, it was kind of crappy. Like every now and then he's like, I just don't know a solution.
Yeah.
I've tried everything.
Sometimes there's just a doozy and there's no way around it. It's just blunt force trauma. You just have to wait.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. All right. So cool. So you accelerated into that area. You like basically like you went from like, I'm going to learn Maya to mm-hmm. I'm being nominated for an Emmy a year from then. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you got involved. How did you just quit Google or what's going on?
Yeah, actually. So during that 8-month period that I was talking about earlier, I was able to cobble together enough of a little demo reel to trick somebody into giving me a job.
Okay. And where
was
that?
That was that NBC Comcast in San Francisco. They were starting a new affiliate that they had bought from Fox Sports.
Okay.
And they were building an art department. So I got to be a part of it from the ground up.
Yep.
And like what has happened at a number of points in my career is I basically had to figure it out as I went.
Right.
And so it was just, it was first job, basically learned in a great environment. Like actually it's, you may not think about it, but broadcast news was actually a great environment for me to really sort of cut my teeth on 3D because you have such a short turnaround. you have no render farm. You're basically rendering
like 30 minutes.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It could be that short. It could be story breaks in the morning. We need, you know, an infographic by the afternoon, or we would do a lot of things for commercials or show opens and package opens and things like that. So you would have, maybe the most I ever had was a week to do a full thing in CG, render it, light it, get it out, composite it. Like, I had to do everything. Like, I did everything. And it got me up to speed so fast because I had no choice. Right. It was sink or swim. And then that, I've done that so many other times just in my careers. I mean, I remember the first time I took a job, a V-Ray job. I had never touched V-Ray before.
Right.
I got a booking from MPC and they're like, oh, we're going to do this one in V-Ray. Up until that point, we had only been working in Mental Ray with them.
Sure.
And they're like, you know V-Ray, right? And I'm like, sure.
Right.
You know, be here on Monday. So I spent Saturday, Sunday. I got V-Ray. I watched a tutorial. I read as many things online as I could. Showed up the first day. I was able to light some stuff. And then one thing that I could always recommend to everybody, especially no matter what level you are at your career, is I never understand why people just throw on their headphones and zone out. There are people next to you that know so much stuff. And if you just take the time to talk to them and ask them questions, you'd be amazed how much of a better artist you'll become.
And do you think that that's possibly because they're ashamed to ask those questions?
To a degree, I think there's a number of things going on. I think some people are just content to just get a paycheck and light a scene and go home. And that's fine if that's what is
good
for
them. Yeah,
but
a confidence in that, right? But if you're like, oh, I don't know how to do this. Hey, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I definitely was clever. Mm-hmm. About the way that I would go about it. I mean, the first time I remember that I worked at a studio that was not a Windows or a PC, that was using like Linux or something like that, I'd never seen a command shell before to fire up Maya.
Right.
And so I got there on my first day and I'm like, crap, how do I
start Maya?
How do I even do this? So I went to the guy next to me and I was like, oh, you know, I'm not familiar yet with the commands, you know, and how you guys, you know, do your naming structures and mm-hmm. like, are you camel case or, you know, whatever. And I got him to do some stuff and I just watched him and I saw the command on how you could fire up Maya.
Yeah, but okay, so, let's put it that way. Couldn't you have just gone up to the guy and say, I've never used Linux. Show me how to use Linux.
Yeah, years later in my progression, I would have done that and I do that. Like now right. I'm picking up Houdini and I've done a ton of dynamics in Maya and there's, you know, I mean, this past summer I did all the smoke from Loki's Scepter in the beginning of Avengers.
Right.
And like things like that, I could do that in my sleep, but then trying to figure out how to do that in Houdini, I'm like,
right.
Trying to wrap my head around it. And so now, I mean, you just, go to the guy next to me that's working for me on this particular job. And I'm like, hey, while you're rendering this, come show me how I import this camera and I can add this particle emitter to, you know, whatever. And now I'll just ask the question. I don't know. It doesn't faze me anymore, but I've definitely seen people that they're just terrified to ask questions or
because they don't
want to
look like idiots.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it's true. And the unfortunate thing is there is a small, it's less now than it has been for, faction of our industry where like people think of things as if I tell you how to do X, Y, Z, then now you know what I know. And then I don't want you to know what I know because that's how I get my bookings is that I know how to do this, you know, kind of thing. I
don't know if that really happens that much anymore.
Right. And that's what I'm saying anymore. But like years ago, you know, that was part of the secret sauce,
right?
Yeah, the secret sauce. You don't want to give away all your secrets.
Right.
But now it's like, you know, just buy the person a beer, go to lunch with them, do whatever, and then ask the question like,
you're only as good as your eye is, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing too, is like you still have to be an artist. Like anybody can find what, you know, setting you need to make this render this fast or to make this fractal affect this particle. I mean, like they're, but every project's different too. So like you can't use that same setup for every shot. Like I'm working on a shot now that I wish I could use my particle rig from the Avengers, but it won't react the same way. So I have to come up with a completely different,
to make something different.
Different setup. Yeah.
Everything can be different.
So it's just, just be nice. Like take your headphones off, talk to the people around you. And then in the same way, like offer them some knowledge that you have. Like maybe you're a really great lighter and they're a nuke artist and they want to understand how it could benefit them now that there's something like V-Ray for nuke.
And as someone who teaches, I can tell you that figuring out how to teach someone how to do that is actually very rewarding as well, right?
Yeah.
Because
there's a lot to be said for knowing why something's happening as opposed to just, you move this slider 0.4 degrees and then this will get you this effect. Well, that's great. You can do that. But that may not apply to the next five shots that you're working on.
No. You have to tell them why you do that.
Right? Yeah. So that's why, I try to be as detailed as I can in the tutorials and things that I make and go that sort of extra mile of explaining why as opposed to just this is this setting, go.
Right.
Because when it's not just that setting, they're going to be like, wait a minute.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. So let's go to the teaching aspect because I think this is an important part. Obviously, this is one of the reasons where we're talking is you have been focusing a lot on teaching as well, right?
Yeah. So what I found happening a lot was I would be, as I progressed as well, like through the career, like I was first a texture artist and a lighter. Then I got into, adding dynamics and then started just being a generalist and then got into souping and things like that. And then I found that, as I was bringing in teams of artists and, we're using new freelancers on this job and that job's using a different pool, that there would be repeated concepts that I would be explaining over and over again, like multi-tile UVs, mapping textures, things like this, where it's like in an actual production, when you get to the point of rendering, they're going to make things faster. They're going to give you a better quality, but they're not things that are really that covered in a lot of tutorials and things like that.
Okay.
So I would find myself repeatedly teaching people the concept of like multi-tile UVs and how to use Mari and how to do like all these things. And so then I was like, well, why don't I just make a video? And then when somebody is going to come in for a project, I can just email them the link and be like, look, we're bringing you in. We're going to use Mari. We're going to use V-Ray. We're going to use RealFlow. We're going to do whatever. If you watch these videos, you will have a basic understanding of how we're going to be running this production. Mm-hmm. And then when they start on day one, they're already ready to go. I don't have to teach them.
Yeah.
I don't have to get them up to speed.
This is your homework before day one.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So that's how really it started. And then also as just a way as I was learning new techniques, I didn't want to forget them. Because, every project's different. Maybe this week we're working on snow. And then maybe I don't touch something that's snow for another year and a half. And then when it's ready to go, it's like, wait, how did I do that?
Right.
And so it was just a way to record and document techniques and things that I picked up along the way. And then I found that it was really useful in that instance to help train up the teams that I would be bringing in for a project. So we were all on the same page and we could cook as fast as possible because deadlines are crazier and crazier as the years go on.
Yep.
And it's like, the software's getting better and you can render things faster, but then the projects are more ambitious. Mm-hmm. And so it never seems to catch up. You're always chasing the deadline.
Yep.
And anything you can do to optimize your setup, to optimize your team, like I think you have to do it. And so that's really how it started, was just collecting it all into a blog form to where I could say, and I still use it, to this day. I have a new ZBrush artist that I was working with on a project this week that had never heard of Mari before. Mm-hmm. And he was still trying to texture in like Photoshop. And I'm like, oh, buddy, let me show you something.
Yeah.
And so it's just, that's kind of how it started.
Well, that's cool. So what are you doing now? So tell people specifically about your site and what it's about.
So the site is called Max Depth. It's max-depth.com. The full name, the website was taken, and I've been trying for years to get it, but they won't give it to me.
Sure.
But yeah, so it's a sort of a collection of tutorials that I've made over the last 2-3 years covering everything from Maya to V-Ray, Mari, Nuke, RealFlow, you know, just a bunch of stuff.
And you sent me a couple of them, and you were having like, oh, I'm having this issue with this, and that, you know. You know,
yeah, as I was creating this last series, I did a sort of an in-depth V-Ray, you know, basically, if you've never touched it before, watch this and you can go work.
Right, know, exactly.
Kind of thing.
Like before you get your V-Ray, it's like, oh, I just got a job. I need to know V-Ray. You go.
Yeah. So that was kind of the reasoning behind it. And just, you know, I've done it for a lot of software, but just in my own career, like I found myself really gravitating towards V-Ray.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just the frame buffer alone saves me so much time in my iteration.
Like, okay.
It's crazy. And then just, you know, speed render, easy use. I felt like I could be beneficial to just make an entire series on just watch this and you can come work for me.
Okay.
You know, basically kind of thing.
Right.
And it's been actually really great. Like, it's gotten a pretty decent response.
Okay, great.
So it was actually, the V-Ray one was the first one that I've ever put up for sale.
Okay.
Up until that point, for the last 3 years, they've all been...
So explain the for sale part of it.
So the for sale part was basically, the last 3 years, everything, all the videos that I'd done were free, and I would just throw them up on Vimeo, you know, kind of thing. But I also have 2 kids.
Right, yeah.
I, you know...
Realize there's a value to this, right?
Yeah, not just the time, just the hours that it takes. I mean, I'm a visual effects supervisor now, CG supervisor, visual effects supervisor. I'm at Pixamundo now. I was at Zoic for the last year. And as I've progressed, my hours become longer and longer and longer. And so being up until 4 a.m. recording a tutorial started to become, you know, it's like, I need to kind of get a return on this. Otherwise, it's like I would rather have my sleep.
Right. And the fact is that people are going to benefit from that, right? So if they spend like $2-3 or whatever it is, like the return on investment for them is actually really high.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And it was a worthwhile experience too, because it gave me the opportunity to really sit down and go really in depth for once. Like, for up until that point, I'd kept all the videos to 20 minutes to no longer than an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only so much you can really gloss over in an hour. And then it just becomes move this slider, move that slider, and this is how it goes. So in order to do something a little bit more fleshed out, where it's like, this is why you do this. This is why in this scenario you would use fixed rate sampling as opposed to adaptive, or you know, you run into a situation where it's like, oh crap, we got to get something in front of a producer in 5 hours from now. This won't render in that amount of time. Set the to progressive, cap the, you know, the render time at a certain amount of time, throw it on the farm, and now you've guaranteed that render is ready.
Right.
And you can get it in front of that,
right,
that person.
And those are production things that happen.
Yeah, all the time.
All the time.
Yeah. So things like that. I mean, even just, I was amazed how many people didn't really even understand or know about the fact that you could create proxies and how much time that would save, especially when you've got hundreds of millions of polygons in a scene. Like, it's the only way you can render.
Yeah.
You know, so things like
that. Some people don't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So like, I just basically went through every viable scenario that I could come up with for every setting that I've ever used in V-Ray, and just went through in a chapter, you know, sort of linear 1 to 16 kind of, I think I wound up with like 16 chapters or something like mm-hmm. that, and just went from the top down and was like, okay, here's sampling.
Yep.
Here's how you build a shader. Here are the lights. Here's why you would use this light. Here's how you manipulate this light. Here's how you do proxies. Here's how you... you know, bring in a VDB sequence from Houdini because you want to render it with V-Ray instead. You know, just basically everything that you would encounter in a production, it's pretty much, it's all hit.
Right.
In there, so.
Well, that's cool, because I think what's really interesting is that basically what you've provided at this point is a series of tutorials based on, like, this is my point of view as someone working in production on the gun, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I've done stuff like, oh, crap, I got to get something done. I got to do something. And so this is, from your point of view, what you need people to know that are working in this scenario, as opposed to, you know, someone is like, oh, all right, you know, like, learn V-Ray, and then you're going to learn some complicated method that you don't necessarily need to know.
Yeah.
But I really like the effect is, like, this is from the point of view of working from that perspective, which is really cool. And you've put it out there, and people can learn from that. And if they, you know, whatever they learn would help you in your production, because, like, all right, you learned this. Great, you're all good to go.
Yeah, you can come in, and I know that you can work on these shots with us. I know that I can trust that you understand that your render is not going to be 20 hours.
Yeah, yeah, and I've seen several of them, and I'm like, I got to tell you, from my point of view, like, yeah, most of that makes sense. I don't necessarily always agree with them because, like you said, there's different ways to skin a cat, right? And that's fine. But I know that what you did in between what you would do and what I would do on the shot, it would be like, yeah, maybe this is, like, a little bit better in this situation, a little bit better in that situation. So just everyone should always take it with a grain of salt. But you are going to learn a lot from that process.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, there's only so much that you could, you know, wrap up. And I think it wound up being a little over 5 hours kind of a thing.
Right.
And like I said, there's a million different scenarios that you could come up with where this would be 10% faster than that or, you know, whatever. So,
but there's also, let's just put it this way, because you know this specifically, those situations change all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So V-Ray 3.3 or whatever it's going to be, I can tell you this, it's going to change a lot.
Yeah.
So everything you ever dealt with sampling may go away.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to make a new set of videos.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's great. I mean, it's the same thing as, you know, before there was the progressive renderer, like now there is, and I have a hard time remembering how I even made shots without RT.
Right.
You know, it's like, so I love that. I welcome that.
Like, people listen to that. Like, RT and progressive rendering is going to change the way you do shots.
Oh,
if you're still dealing with buckets as you're doing iterations,
no way.
You're doing it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, lighting and look dev, if you're not using RT,
right,
you're wasting your time.
Yeah.
It really is at this point. Like, there's two.
Buckets still work for production rendering.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean,
because you save memory ultimately, but no one wants to see buckets on the screen.
Yeah, no, and there's so much iteration that has to happen, especially on a tight deadline. I mean, you know, film is better because you have so much more time, you know, on average than like a commercial or television. I mean, I have television shows that I work on where we'll get plates and we'll have 5 days.
Yeah,
to turn around the entire episode. Like,
yeah.
So I mean,
you've basically, like, you know, you've got a shot. 5 days, make a visual effects, put it on the farm. It's got to go on the air in 5 days.
Yeah, and you need to see immediately, is that light on? Is that, you know, how is that shadow going to cast? How is it? And getting that instant visual feedback of, you know, taking that rec light and moving it over there. What does that get me? Okay, now the shadow's falling over here. That's where I need it to be. Great. Doing it the old way of, like, waiting for that entire frame to render just to see if that change that you made worked?
Yep.
No way, man.
No, I know. And I love the fact that, like, I just move a light and it's like, oh, there's the highlight change, like, move back and forth.
Yeah.
Looks great.
Yeah, it's amazing. It really changed the way that I have done look dev. And I mean, even just last year when I was at Zoic, two really great artists. Like, I hate to be all like shout out, you know, kind of a thing, but, like,
no, do it. The artists need them.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, Jake Long and Christina Murguia at Zoic, they're two of the best artists that I've ever worked with.
Awesome.
And talking about people that are not afraid to ask questions and learn something new, like, they had both not used RT before I got there.
Right.
And they were doing all this look dev like the old way, and they were still getting shots out. Once they learned how to use RT, and they were banging stuff out so fast.
The productivity went way
up.
Right?
And I mean, and just like, it's things like that. It's there. Use it.
Yeah.
It's only going to help you bang those shots out faster.
I know. And lighters are known as some of the biggest alcoholics in the visual effects industry because they have to wait for so long for their stuff to like give them feedback. And it's like, well, might as well have a scotch while I'm waiting for a shot to render.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not right. You know, like you got to be able to get feedback. And I think like, you know, RT and GPU rendering and all these other things are going to change that in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's really cool. And, so I will put your link up in terms of so people know to go over there and, you know, check out your stuff. And yes, you're going to have to learn how to do it Tim's way, which is great.
And it's just one way.
It is one way, but it's a good way, right? It is a way that Tim has learned to work in production, which I think is something important. Don't take it as, you know, take it as it's a good guiding way to work, right?
Yeah, there's no one way to do anything.
No. And you will continue to update it, obviously, as new builds come out.
Yeah, when builds come out and things change, you have to keep it up to date.
Right.
Like, I've had a number of tutorials that, like, I'm about to phase out because now they're so deprecated in terms of, you know, versioning or whatever, that it's like, it's, you know, really don't watch that one anymore. Now let's watch this one. Kind of
I remember specifically, like when I put my Noman DVDs out, this was a long, long, long time ago. There was no dome light, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the way to do an environment light was to put it into the environment light and build it into the GI settings.
Mm-hmm.
And it was painful, but that was the only way to do it back then. And then Vlad was like, oh, I'll just put the environment light into the dome light. And it was like, what is this dome light thing?
Mm-hmm.
Totally changed everything.
Yeah.
But people never knew about that. Mm-hmm. They were like, oh, I followed your DVD. I have to do it this way. I was like, yeah, but that DVD is 10 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it constantly, you have to, and that's the other thing too, that I think is a great thing for people to remember is you have to constantly learn. You have to stay up on all the versions of software. Cause I mean, you know, if you get 2-3 versions out, I mean, you're a dinosaur at this point at the rate that, you know, new builds and things are coming out. So it's like, a video that I made 2-3 years ago, for the most part, the techniques were great then, but they're about to be phased out.
There's some fundamentals that are important though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for the most part,
but don't take it like a word for word, right?
Yeah. Everything changes, and it should, because like we said, the projects get more complex, the scenarios get tighter, and you have to come up with a different way to tackle the same problem.
Yeah.
So
I'm struggling with that right now because I'm doing a bunch of work in VR.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to teach people about how to make their VR content. But every hour, everything I said is obsolete, right?
Yeah.
It's a struggle. It's like, oh my God. It's like, is it done yet? It's like, well, it was done until some news broke on whatever. And now I have to do everything all over again.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a struggle. So just realize like everything you just heard is going to be obsolete, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't mean that everything you heard is wrong.
Yeah.
You can just learn from it.
Yeah. No, there's still, you know, every now and then, you know, you get to the point where you've reached saturation, where you've kind of seen every tutorial you could find on a given subject.
Right.
But every now and then, you know, you'll find something that, you know, is from 5-8 years ago, and you know that it's deprecated, but it's still interesting to see the thought process that went behind how you used to have to do that. And you can still glean some interesting insight, you know, by just figuring out, okay, well, that's how they did that. How did they get from A to B to figure out how to do that? Now I have this new scenario and these new set of tools, and I've reached a point, you know, where this particular thing isn't working the way that you think that it would.
Right.
How did they, you know, get to A to B? Maybe I'll take that same kind of road, and then you may find a new way of doing something, a new way of tackling some you know, file format interchange from this software package to that software package. Because that's the other thing too, is there's no there's no one software package anymore. I mean, like on a project that I'm working on now, I'm bouncing files back and forth between Maya and Max and Houdini and, you know, and back and forth again, you know, so.
But every now and then there's like fundamentals that are important, right?
Yeah.
I'll just give you an example, something that I've joked about on this podcast is Rob Niederhorst, like linear workflow.
Yeah.
That's fundamental.
Yeah.
You know, linear workflow, that is physics. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like you can't change the way light works.
Right.
It's always going to be a linear lighting situation.
Yeah, and not only that too, but even just how you light a scene. Like it's more to it than just throwing up a dome.
No, right.
You know, it's like right. You still have to know the principles of cinematic.
You need it to be a little bit brighter, double your light.
Yeah.
You need to be a little bit brighter than that, quadruple your light. Like it's literally like, it's not like go to 2 to 3, no, like 2 to 4,
yeah,
a little brighter, 8, a little brighter, 16.
Yeah,
like it's
stops on a camera.
Yeah, it's like, but don't understand, like that's a thing that's fundamental, right?
Yeah.
Understanding that. Yeah.
Yeah, just principles. It's the same thing as like, you know, it's a good thing to have a wide understanding of more than one thing.
Right.
Like I'm really happy that we're living sort of in a world of generalists now. Because you should know more than just one thing. You should be for no other reason than how you are affecting a pipeline. Like knowing that what you're doing is going to directly affect your comper.
I love
or
it.
Or is going to directly affect something else. And you have
but
a responsibility.
But you're your own comper if you're a generalist, right?
Yeah, well, it depends. For the most part, I believe in slap comping all my own CG before I hand it off to comp.
Yeah.
Just because one.
You want to make sure it works.
Yeah, so that you don't get those emails, hey, your render passes are all
right.
Jacked, you know?
Yeah.
But that's the other thing too, is like, you know, being responsible for yourself and the other people on your team is only going to make you more successful and is going to make the project more successful.
Yep.
Because you didn't hose somebody when you left on Friday, hit render, and then the guy that's coming in on Saturday is missing in, you know, an XYZ pass or, you know, some goofy pass that they needed and were relying on, and you didn't deliver it because I wouldn't think to have a world XYZ pass. I just need a diffuse beauty spec reflection. That's how I, you know, being responsible.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, I think that that's a matter of, you know, obviously working closely with whoever you're working with and understanding that and understanding why the world XYZ pass is important, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some people may not actually know that. They're like, I'm just a lighter. You know, it's like that's
right.
Well, that's the nice thing about, as you said, the generalist now rising to the occasion because, like, oh, they have the bigger picture in mind, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's good to know. It's good to know more than just your particular task. Because the other thing too is longevity for your own career.
Right.
You know, you're a lighter today. Maybe you'll be a comper a year from now. I mean,
right.
Like there's a great dude, super actually inspirational, Nat Phong Torres, or Nat Phong Tran over at Pixamundo. I knew him as a comp soup. And now he's one of our best Houdini artists.
Oh, interesting.
You know, just be more than one thing. Like he just he picked it up because he saw the necessity to, well, you know, we have a deficit in this area. Let me see if I can help. And now a year and a half later, he's banging out shots with the best of them. Like it's stuff like that is great. Like give me 10 of those guys.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, that's cool. All right. So you will give us all your information about all your tutorials.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put that on the website. So those of you who are listening, I noticed we're getting a lot more subscribers these days. So make sure to go to labs.chaosgroup.com. Check out what's going on there. Go to the podcast section. Check out Tim Hansen's podcast and get links in case you want to do that. And share that with people who would want to check it out.
Yeah. And also, too, just for listeners of the podcast, if you use promo code GARAGE25, you'll get 25% off the V-Ray training series that I made.
Awesome. I like it. GARAGE25. I'll put that on social as well, which is great. So check that out. I'd love to hear more about that. And also, What's the other thing I want to say? Well, it's been great having you here, and I'd love to hear more about what's going on. So make sure, don't be a stranger. If you have other things you want to tell us, let us know about that.
For sure. And it's been great being here. It's always great to see you guys. Like, yeah. I love when I get a chance to come over here. And just, again, for people listening, these guys have been so helpful in terms of reaching out and being available when you have a problem. Send them a bug, send them a request. They will get back to you. It's just, I mean, other software manufacturers I've had to deal with a lot doing the tutorials. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Chris and Vlado, I always know that I can count on you guys to figure it out with me, and it always gets done. So
that's been great.
Yeah. Shameless V-Ray plug, but I'm a V-Ray fanboy.
Well, that's fine. No, I mean, like, you know, that's, we love it, and it's not shameless. It's, this is what we do. And if it makes your livelihood better, then it makes our livelihood better too. So I appreciate it. All right, guys, we are going to let the last bucket drop. I know it's been going a little long, but I appreciate Tim coming by and talking about his experiences. And I'm sure we'll have him on again when some other awesome thing happens in his lifetime. All right, thanks, guys.